Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
So, Lauren, your beat is labor, right?
That's correct.
So how often are you trying to talk to workers?
How often do I talk to workers? Gosh, I talk to workers all the time.
Lauren Kaori Gurley reports over at The Washington Post.
So retail workers, fast food workers, restaurant workers, meatpacking workers, construction workers, people who are either providing services or producing goods for companies.
You get the idea here. She talks to a lot of workers. About a year ago, Lauren started focusing on one kind of worker in particular, child workers. The federal government had just come out with this report showing young teenagers were being employed at a Hyundai plant, and kids as young as 13 were working in a meatpacking facility. Lauren wanted to find out what that was like, so she talked to a middle schooler who was sanitizing knives at a slaughterhouse, and a teenager who was paying his family's heating bills by working at McDonald's. And then she met Jacqueline. Jacqueline is 21 now, but she first started working in Colorado's lettuce and potato fields at 13.
She was working 12-hour shifts starting at 4:30 a.m. often, and that was to avoid sort of the most extreme of the heat in the summers.
Oof, that's a long day, though, for anyone.
For a 13-year-old, especially doing, you know, pretty heavy manual labor, it was really tough. And I asked her how much she was making, and she says she doesn't remember because the job was off the books and the money went to her parents.
You say that Jacqueline didn't even know what she was being paid. Did she know that she had rights as a child worker?
She said she had no idea because this is like her world. Everyone she grew up with, mostly, immigrant Latino workers from Mexico, they all started working when they were around her age, and it was totally normal. And she hadn't, most people were not speaking, at least their parents weren't speaking English. And so they really had very limited information about their rights. She just said that wasn't something she was thinking about at all.
The thing is, Jacqueline's job was completely legal. Farm workers can pull long hours, even if they're young. But as an adult, Jacqueline had come to question what she'd had to do. A lot of the kids Lauren talked to were questioning what they had to do. And when the Post crunched the numbers, they saw something else, an alarming spike in child labor violations. They've actually tripled in the last 10 years. It's so interesting you say actually what Jacqueline was doing. Yeah, it's totally legal. That seems like a massive loophole. So are politicians, state legislators, are they looking to close loopholes like that?
You know, not necessarily. I think, you know, in response to the influx of child labor violations, you are seeing a lot of states trying to strengthen their laws and others trying to actually weaken them.
Weaken them?
Yeah. So I believe since 2022, 16 states have passed laws that weaken child labor protections for minors.
Today on the show, the United States has been quietly assembling a patchwork quilt of child labor laws. Some states are looking to protect kids. Some states aren't. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. It's easy to start a quote. You'll be able to choose the best option for you. It's fast. Now that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you. It is just one of many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. This episode is brought to you by Wondery. With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. In the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future of safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more, Wondery means business. I asked Lauren to start out by explaining how kids end up in the workforce in the first place. We're all familiar with teens who work as lifeguards in the summer or get a job at the mall. But the kids she's been speaking with, they seem to be doing something fundamentally different from that. They're supporting themselves and their families, sometimes by doing pretty dangerous work. And Lauren says the laws that are showing up in state legislatures looking to tighten or loosen restrictions around young people in the workforce, they're responding to a surge of teenage workers.
I think there is one big reason for this. Coming out of the pandemic, we've had a super tight labor market. And one way that you might have been familiar with this is the Great Resignation. You're seeing lots of American adults quit jobs that are low wage or otherwise undesirable and, you know, move on to other opportunities. And the sort of pandemic reopening has created tons of demand for industries like leisure and hospitality, travel. All sorts of industries are facing labor shortages because they're rapidly reopening. No one wants to work in these industries because they're low wage. So one way of not having to raise wages to attract adults anymore is to turn to teenagers.
Who are these teenagers? Like, are they American teenagers? Are they kids from other places?
They are both. So the tight labor market has drawn in American teenagers. A lot of these teenagers who are looking for work that I've spoken to, at least anecdotally, need to work because, you know, their parents or their families are in tight financial situations. Inflation has been extremely high. It was like up to 9% at one point last year. And so kids are actually contributing to their family's rent. They are working to pay for gas. They're working to pay for school supplies, like we heard from Jacqueline. And then one other aspect of this is the influx of migrants, particularly unaccompanied minors coming from Latin America, who, you know, need to pay off debts in their home countries or smuggling fees or need to support themselves because they're alone or need to send back money to their families and are finding jobs often in industries that we consider hazardous or dangerous for kids to be working in.
So let's look at one state where one of these bills allowing more teen workers has passed. I'm talking about Iowa, maybe. Republican Governor Kim Reynolds signed a state law that allowed children to work in industrial laundries, light manufacturing, demolition, roofing, excavation. These are jobs that were considered too hazardous for children, like as recently as 2023. They also approved longer working hours for 14 and 15 year olds. This passed maybe a year ago. So what do we know about how this new law has been playing out over the last year?
Yeah, it's a really great question. So I should also note that, you know, in the industrial laundries and light manufacturing, some of these industries, they're allowing kids as young as 14 and 15 to work in these jobs that were previously considered too dangerous. And a lot of labor advocates have actually said this new law comes in direct conflict with federal laws and may be illegal. So I have been really trying to figure out how it's playing out. I'm not exactly sure.
Is part of it that it's hard to know because there's not so much tracking under these new laws?
I think it's really hard to know because there isn't great enforcement in the states. Like states that are repealing child labor laws or rolling them back tend to have very few enforcement mechanisms. The penalties are extremely low. I think in Iowa, the penalty for a serious but non-fatal injury of a minor for a company that illegally employs a minor in a hazardous industry where they get, you know, seriously injured is $2,500. And if there's no serious injury, but there's a violation, it's $500. So for a major corporation, this is like pocket change.
Well, and that's if they illegally employ a teenager.
Right.
But there are lots of teenagers they can legally employ.
Now, right. Yeah. So what they may have been doing before, you know, may have been illegal and they weren't getting fined. And now, you know, they can do these things and it's perfectly legal. Yeah, like you said, it's hard to gauge what is actually going on. And I think also in terms of, you know, whether there have been injuries or deaths related to this, I've not heard of any so far, and I've been looking out for them. But like I said, there are very few investigators looking out for these instances. And a lot of times it's up to the minor to report issues or to go to an advocate.
They may not even know what to do.
Yeah, especially when you're dealing with migrant youth workers, like they probably don't have access to sort of those resources or even know where to begin.
I know that Iowa's not alone when it comes to loosening child labor restrictions. There's this tactic you've flagged as something you're seeing again and again in efforts in other states. And it's about eliminating work permitting requirements for kids. How many states are looking to do this and why is it important?
So the progression of these bills is moving very quickly. So as of today, there are four states, Alabama, West Virginia, Missouri, and Georgia are considering bills that would eliminate work permits for minors. And basically what the work permit does is it verifies their age or that they have parental or school permission to work. And a lot of times, like the danger of child labor violations is that it interferes with someone's education if they're working all night long.
I'm a little fascinated by how people advocating for laws like these that sort of lift child labor restrictions think about what they're doing. And I was really struck by this comment from a Republican state senator, Dan Zumbach, in Iowa, who is in favor of lifting child labor restrictions. He said, "I was almost begging to get to work at age 5. I wanted to let folks know that I knew how to work. We have sheltered our kids so much they've forgotten how to do one of the things we're all training them to do. And that's how to work. And they will learn some jobs that they never want to do again." What do you make of that perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to the opportunities thing, which I think is, you know, it's not just child labor laws that, you know, Republicans use to get rid of regulations. But I think you see this a lot in labor laws, like the perspective that they give, or the argument that they give for reducing protections for kids is that this is all about opportunity. This is about freedom. This will actually, you know, give people a leg up when, you know, there is very substantial evidence that kids who work above a certain amount of hours while they're in high school tend to have much worse outcomes later in life across a variety of things in terms of, you know, how much income they make, whether they have consistent employment as an adult, their health outcomes, all sorts of things are sort of at stake down the road.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like you and I are talking about child labor here, but advocates for loosening the rules around kids in the workplace might call what they're advocating for youth employment, which it's like the words are synonyms, but I feel like they have very different implications.
Right. Yeah. You even had the Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, recently signed a bill into law that allows 16 and 17 year olds to work 7 days a week. And if you're homeschooled or in an online learning program, you can work unlimited hours. So like essentially you could work overnight shifts while you're in high school. And the Republican legislator who sponsored the bill, she said in a hearing that these are youth workers that are driving automobiles. They are not children. She said they're not children several times, which sort of goes to the point that you're making where we're sort of arguing over what the definition of a child is now.
After the break, one of the states that's taking the opposite approach to child labor. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
I want to talk about the states that are looking to protect against child labor. And I want to zoom in on one state again, Colorado. You described a recent package introduced by state legislators there as the strongest one yet to crack down on employers that break child labor laws. What does that package include?
So last year, Colorado actually passed a law that strengthens child labor protections, basically allows families to sue the employer of a child who was injured while they were working underage. Believe it or not, most states, that's not possible because of workers' compensation laws where the kid's already getting money.
Wow.
So this legislator in Colorado, Sheila Leader is her name, she sponsored that bill. And once she passed that bill, Colorado has also been seeing child labor violations in meatpacking facilities. And she really sort of got energized around this issue and thought she sort of did some research and has now introduced this way more expansive, comprehensive bill. It raises fines for child labor violations and deposits them into a fund for labor enforcement.
Why is that important? Like, how much are people being fined now?
The current penalty for a child labor offense in Colorado, an initial penalty is
$20.
$20? $20. Uh-huh.
That's nothing.
Yeah, I was super shocked to hear this myself, and so was this legislator when she was doing her research. These are really outdated laws, and I think most labor advocates agree there is just like no deterrent factor here. For many of these companies, multinational corporations, major corporations like meatpacking companies, fast food companies. So this new package would raise penalties. It would also make information about like bad actor companies that violate child labor laws publicly available, if you can believe it or not. In many states, that information is off limits to the public.
So I can't know who did what with child labor.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You've written about how Colorado is also hoping to address the question of how to protect families of child workers. Why is that important? Like, I know you've written about how enmeshed families often are in their kids' jobs. The kids are often funding their family, like basics, rent, things like that. So their parents, they're part of this. So how would the Colorado's law protect the families, and why is that innovative?
Sure. So I think there are two reasons it's innovative. A lot of kids and their parents don't come forward about child labor violations because in some cases, parents get punished when kids are working illegally. A 13-year-old girl who I interviewed last year who was working in a slaughterhouse in Nebraska, she was working the overnight shift cleaning kill floor equipment. Her parents ended up being criminally charged for her working condition, or for her working this job, whereas the company itself wasn't even criminally charged. They paid a civil penalty.
So what would happen to a family like that in Colorado if this law passed?
The parents would not be at risk of facing criminal charges if they played a role in allowing their kid to work. Like with the 13-year-old I spoke of in Nebraska, her stepdad was driving her to work, and her mom, you know, it seemed like had helped her get like fake papers that like allowed her to work. So if this that had been happening in Colorado, they wouldn't have faced jail time, which they did in Nebraska.
Oof. You know, thinking about Colorado makes me think back to Jacqueline, the woman we talked about right at the top of our conversation, who is from Colorado and worked in the field since she was 13 and didn't even know how much she was being paid. What does Jacqueline think of a law like this one that's being proposed in her home state?
I mean, she is a big advocate for it. She told me that like laws have to be a lot stricter because people don't report violations don't even know their rights, which is, you know, the first step to reporting violations. You know, she's still very active or she has become as an adult very active in sort of advocating for this because of her own experience, because of, you know, what she saw her family go through, not just herself, but like all the kids in her community were doing this, and her mom became disabled because of the job, and she ended up losing her dad as well while she was in high school to cancer. And so I think all of these sort of really difficult experiences and having to work really changed her perspective on children working. And she is doing well today, but felt like her education also was impacted by this.
I can imagine all that making you quite bitter.
Yeah. I think she said at some moment, you know, later on, not when she was 13, but maybe when she was 16, she sort of took stock of where she was working out and, you know, the elements and these long 12-hour days, and was like, this, I don't want this for the rest of my life. I need to get out of here. And really started to think that it was wrong, that this is how she, these were the conditions she was subjected to.
It seems to me like laws like this one that's proposed in Colorado, they won't do much without a whole lot more enforcement. Is that fair of me to say?
Yes. A lot of states, including Colorado, have, you know, less than 10 child labor investigators.
For the whole state?
For the whole state. I don't have the exact number on Colorado, although two people told me it was like just less than a handful. And so without any real enforcement mechanism or, you know, money devoted to resources going toward enforcement, the penalties don't really matter, right? If no one is going into the workplaces and, you know, going into communities and talking to people and figuring out where kids are working, then it doesn't matter if the penalty is $20 or $1,000, because no one's getting the penalty to begin with.
So when you look at a law like Colorado's, do you think like it's a good start, but there's more to change essentially?
Yeah, I think it's a great start. I think that they need to, you know, hopefully devote more resources to enforcement. And then this will sort of really beef up, you know, protections for kids and child labor. I think that also combined with doing some high school education is probably a good combination of ways to protect kids. I have heard from numerous advocates that, you know, just raising penalties alone is really, really not enough.
Did Jacqueline ever talk to you about what would have actually helped her when she was a teenager?
I think she mainly feels like knowing her rights would be really helpful, and having a lot stricter laws would have been really helpful. Because there was no way for her to know whether what was going on was wrong or right, and it didn't feel like anyone had her back, or that the government or any other entity was out there trying to protect her.
Lauren, thanks for coming on the show, and thanks for all the reporting you did here.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mary.
Lauren Kaori Gurley is a labor reporter at The Washington Post. And that's our show. If you're a fan of What Next, the best way to support our work is to join Slate Plus. Go on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up. What Next is produced by Paige Osborne, Alina Schwartz, Rob Gunther, Anna Phillips, and Madeline Ducharme. We are led by Alicia Montgomery with a little boost from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations here at Slate. And I'm Mary Harris. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you back here next time.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com. From the jury selection, to the opening arguments, to the witness testimony and cross-examination, and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.